Hey, this is Danko Jones. You're listening to Cobras and Fire. Rock's not dead. You found it.
You're listening to the Cobras and Fire podcast, featuring special guest, Danko Jones.
The time is now. You gotta jump off the side. Last things are turning, fields are burning. Gotta get on the main line. Hit hard. Don't pull no punches. Don't take no crap. Rise up. Get out of bed. Follow your hunches. In this life, man, you gotta pick sides. I'm standing tall for mine. Doing what's right, cause now is the time. We come together. When we do, we get better. I gotta tell you, it feels special to see us standing together.
Cobras and Fire. My name is Baco, and I am joined by the Dankalicious, Lewis Cannon. Lewis, how are you this morning?
I'm doing great. I'm calling from the Cobra Mobile Studio, and as always...
You didn't sign it out. I planned on using it today.
Say it again? Oh, you did?
You didn't sign out the Cobra Mobile Studio, so I need you to return it, stat.
Okay, that's fine. I forgot about looking at our reservations.
The protocol.
The day. Yeah. Well, anyway, as I always do, I am actually calling from a parking lot. I was about to rent a car because we're having car issues, and there's a huge line. So as always, when I'm in a situation where I have to wait, I immediately go to my car and think, can I record a podcast right now?
I do that basically. Anytime I use a public restroom.
Sure, you're like, this another opportunity. 5 minutes, bust out an episode.
I gotta take a poop and total wine. Let's give Lewis a call.
Anyway, what are we here to intro here? We're introing some Danko, yes?
Yeah, one of the guys, he's clearly a pretty prominent fixture in our podcast history, right? I mean, he had a lot to do with us getting together and all that good stuff. And we're both big fans, that kind of thing.
Yeah, he's just basically a spirit animal. He's kind of like the example of, if you want to just define just pure rock and roll, just say put on a Danko album. It's got all the elements of kind of what this podcast has, a little bit of old, a little bit of new, but it's all there.
Right. You've had a chance to listen to it. Any general thoughts? Were you pleased with the interaction I had with Danko? You got to talk to him the first time, so I cut in line this time. I was like, no way, it's my turn, bro.
That's right. No, it was great. I was glad we got to in this album promotional cycle. Before I go to the interview, I just want to say this much. His album coming out is called Rock Supreme, and I have heard he's trickled out 4 singles since the end of last year. I will tell you this much. Those 4 singles already, I was like, this is going to be from production, and I just dug them so much. I was like, this is going to be the best since Below the Belt, which is my favorite. But then on the beginning and end of this episode, you played 2 I haven't heard, and I'm like, that sealed the deal. Those 6 right there. Love them. I love those 2 you put on this episode more than the other 4.
my 3 favorite tracks on the record are not the 4 he's released, and I've enjoyed the 4
awesome.
He has. So yeah, it seemed like Fire Music and then Black Cat kind of were stepping back into the right direction, because, and he talks about it in the interview, kind of being at a low point during what's like Black Gives Way to Blue. What's that record called?
Rock and Roll.
Rock and Roll is Black and Blue.
Black and Blue. Yeah,
so that, I remember that was like the first Danko record I bought. So it was a little disappointing for me, you know, because I you know, listened and streamed some stuff like on YouTube, but this is really before streaming services took off as much.
Sure.
And so, you know, I was a little disappointed. The first one I buy is kind of a fucking turd.
Yeah, I'm glad you came around to that, because I think you're like, that's pretty good.
But yeah, at the time, I was really enjoying this. I had this new euphoric sense of, like, I'm finding new music again, you know?
Sure.
And so some of because I had, you know, some of his earlier stuff, you know, he had videos on, and those are the big tunes, right? So I kind of carried that into Black Is Way to, or Rock and Roll's Black and Blue, but there's a few good songs on there.
There's two good songs. There's Beautiful Day, and there's the last track, the God.
Yeah, I Believe in God or whatever.
Yep. But anyway, but the point is that the interview is great. I mean, I'm not going to even reveal it. There's a couple podcasts I've already subscribed to from his recommendations and things like that. And I think he was very honest with the ups and downs of his career, touring. You hit a bunch of different things, and I think it's great. Also, I always say is you passed the douchebag test, because I think you were only slated for 25 minutes to a half hour, and you're with them for about an hour. So
yeah,
well done.
Yeah, no, it was a good loose chat. You know, I mean, and that's kind of the way I think I find more enjoyable to listen to. So I'm always happy when I can accomplish that. So yeah, I'm pleased with the way it turned out, and I guess I think everybody else is going to dig it too. I will make one correction. I incorrectly said the article I wrote for Decibel Geek was called The Greatness of Danko Jones. I was trying to say that I wrote the article, and then the first episode that we did was called The Greatness of Danko Jones.
Sure.
Anyway, and then it came up later, and I just kind of rolled with it. So for anybody listening, there is no article that I wrote. I think it was a record review for Danko that got your attention, and then one of the very first two episodes we recorded, I can't remember if it was the first one or not, but was The Greatness of Danko Jones.
Yes, yes.
And don't go back and listen to that.
No. We say the first, at least started episode 15 to 20 forward. Maybe the Motley Crue,
yeah.
All things end with Chipotle, all bad things forward. But you go further, that's kind of like our Harder Than Hell production era.
Pretty much, yeah. We're still, we were ignorant jackasses. Now we know what we're doing and we're jackasses. So.
Correct. We refined, yeah. We refined the stupidity.
Yeah, there you go, there you go, yeah. I got nothing else to say to you.
No, let's get down to some Danko.
When she got that look in her eyes, she'll hypnotize. The whole room succumbs to her fire. She's more than fine. And me, man, well, I love the song and dance. Fall in a trance. I get the feeling it's in season to start retreating on her advance. And there's that something in the way that she walks into a room. While other times she's already on my mind. Never too soon. I can tell it's all a disguise. When I see the glint in her eyes, makes me fall even harder. I wanna tell her I don't wanna be here. I wanna be with her tonight. Everybody says the girl's no fun. Stuck up thinks she's better than everyone. They only see what's on the outside, but that girl's the one. Can't hesitate if she wants me tonight.
I'd like to welcome to the program Danko Jones. Welcome back, Danko. How are you today?
Doing good, doing great.
You know, a few years back, I was kind of in a moment of, I don't know, like a musical lethargy. I'd kind of given up on new music for the most part. I'm talking rock and metal, which is, you know, my forte. But one of the guys on the metal show had talked about Danko Jones, and I hadn't heard of you. And so just on a whim, I went and checked it out, and the first song I heard was Rock and Roll Proletariat. And that was like a very first step to kind of re-energize me. I mean, since that point, I've been kind of like almost like a teenager again, rediscovering all sorts of great new rock and roll. And you're responsible for that. You're also kind of responsible for me and my host starting this podcast, as it was a article I wrote about you called "The Greatness of Danko Jones" that got his attention, and he asked me to start a show with him. So,
oh, cool!
Thank you very much for your contribution to our program.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. That's crazy, but wow, that's flattering.
Yeah, well, I wanted to start off on a good note, you know what I mean? Get things moving in the right way, but...
Right.
You know, you host your own podcast, obviously, the Danko Jones podcast. Do you listen to a lot of other podcasts?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what listening to a lot is, but I do listen to a few.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe like 5 or 6 regularly, maybe more, but yeah. There's like, yeah, maybe like 5 or 6. Yeah.
What
I just don't know. I don't know what a lot is.
That's probably a lot. I mean, I don't know. I mean, yeah, I mean, it's a pretty vague term. I wasn't trying to pin you down on a math equation or anything, but
Okay.
What do you look for? Like what type of what draws you into a podcast, I guess? We're talking on one now, you know.
Right. Well, I mean, my favorite podcast is Tiger Belly. And I listen to that religiously. So that's my number one. And that's hosted by Bobby Lee, who's a comedian and an actor. So that's my favorite podcast. And then after that, I like The Vinyl Guide with Nate Goyer. I like WTF with Mark Maron, Turned Out a Punk with Damien Abraham. I listen to a Canadian-centric podcast called Canada Land. And there's another podcast. It's a music podcast called Famous Lost Words. It's a Canadian podcast, but it basically airs old interviews from an archive of a radio station, I believe. And they go way back, like, you know, Elton John in you know, 75 or something like that, or you know, old Diana Ross interviews or old Neil Young interviews, you know, and it's great because we're inundated by all these interviews that are today, like current, present interviews. But it's fun to listen to, you know, all those interviews still exist, and it's an immediate time machine back to how it used to be, you know, beyond the albums.
Mm-hmm.
So that's called Famous Lost Words.
Famous Lost Words.
I also listen to... Yeah, the Jasta Show. There's another podcast in the UK, Life in the Stocks. A friend of mine does a Nick Flanagan weekly podcast. Yeah, those are pretty much it, I think. Oh, and the Henry Rollins podcast I listen to.
I like that one a lot.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? You kind of touched on a couple things just in the podcast that you're interested in. That I've noticed, obviously, with your writing and of course your podcast and your music, that you definitely come across as one of the most passionate and self-aware rock musicians out there that I can think of. You know, I can kind of look back now and pinpoint that hearing Kiss Alive 2 when I was 7 kind of set my path in life. Do you kind of have that moment looking back that that you knew basically, or at least in hindsight, you can say, yep, that was when music took over?
Well, yeah. I mean, I did join the Kiss Army when I was 6, so I got Kiss Alive. That was my first rock album. So I guess that would be a big deal, especially when Kiss wrote me back. That was actually the biggest thing. And so once they wrote me back, you know, I kind of became a fan for life, sort of, so to speak.
Yeah.
And then over the years, yeah, there was moments where I found out about a band and I really got into it, you know, more than anything else in life to get into, you know. I really found myself just completely obsessed with, you know, whatever the music was. So I kind of knew, but I kind of knew all the time, but I kind of also fooled myself because I knew, realistically speaking, you know, to be in a band as your career or job or occupation, that was, I mean, at least in the circles that I was in, that was a ridiculous idea.
Going back to like maybe while you're still in high school, did it like kind of take a lot of your attention away from like the ability to focus in school at all? It did for me.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm sure if I didn't have music in my life and, you know, maybe interest somewhere else, it just wasn't as passionate. I could have focused more on schoolwork. Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
You know, I really liked your article, the writing you used to do for the Huffington Post.
Thanks.
You're going to have to, I'm going off of memory here, but you did one, there's a couple I wanted to talk about, but one of them was about how the vinyl revival and something, and I don't remember exactly how you said it, but it was something along the lines of like, you know, people are almost treating these things like they're an artifact of some sort when, you know, your opinion was they're meant to be opened, played, you know, the point is to hear the music on the record, not, you know, put it away forever or something like that. Does that ring a bell?
Well, because I mean, even now when you buy a record, it comes with a digital download, which is really convenient.
Yeah.
But that means that once you've downloaded the album, that's what you listen to. You archive the actual vinyl away, and you never touch it. And that's fine if you're a collector. But like, I don't really understand how people who just started collecting vinyl are suddenly collectors now. I mean, I find the notion ridiculous. It's just a pose is basically what I'm trying to say.
Because you've been collecting your whole life, basically, or?
But the reason for me collecting vinyl wasn't because I wanted to look cool and have a big collection so I could show off and go, hey, look, you know, look how, I don't know what people are thinking, but I would assume it's that you're cool. My whole reason for collecting vinyl was because CDs were exploding and people were unloading their record collections and you can get them for like $3. Like albums now that go for, you know, $40, $50, you could buy them for $5. Well, for $20, I can walk into a used record store and come out with three or four albums. Mm-hmm. So to me, it was more of a way, this is before the internet, a way to listen to as much music, you know, for as little money as I possibly could. And you know, I didn't have a lot of money at all. So, you know, $10, if I could get two albums instead of one, mm-hmm. wow, then I win, you know. And I didn't care if it was used and someone owned it before. And I didn't care if the speakers I had weren't the best. In fact, they were probably the worst. And as long as I could hear the music, that was all that counted. That's another thing is, people put an emphasis on, you know, the stereo system that they have and how high tech it is. It's always been this way. And I've never, ever put any emphasis on that. My whole thing, growing up, I had one of the early Walkmans. Like my parents got it for really cheap, and the one I got, and it was a Sanyo, and the one I got came with speakers that you can plug into the headphone jack, and you can listen to it, you know, without listening to the headphones, and that was my stereo system when I was growing up. And so, you know, a lot of people don't understand when I'm really vocal against cassettes is because I lived with cassettes. I grew up on cassettes, you know, and that's another fetishized piece of furniture now, or cassettes. People think they're so cool.
I don't understand that one.
Well, that's because you probably lived through it like I did, where they unraveled. They unraveled it, you know, when you were, I don't know. The worst is when they would unravel and that was the only cassette you brought in. You're 2 hours away from home. And so now you have to go home on the bus in silence. That was the worst. Those were the worst. And that's why when I hear people, you know, fetishizing cassette, I remember how they didn't live through it. You know, they don't know how really bad it is, because if they did, they'd never touch it.
Do you ever stick a pen in your cassette to rewind it to save on the battery?
Well, I had to, to stick a pen on it, a pencil inside the cassette because it had unraveled. And the only way to do it usually was with a pencil, a certain pencil that, that fit perfectly in the cassette. Cause if you did it quickly or too quickly or haphazardly, then the tape would wrap it around itself and then you'd have to throw it away. And I've thrown away so many cassettes because of that, you know, and you have to rebuy an album. And at the time when I didn't have a lot of money to spend on cassettes, I'm not going to rebuy something I know. And so I don't buy it again. And that sucks.
Do we're seeing the same thing now with where basically CDs are unloaded for next to nothing. Are you stocking up on those?
I have to say, actually, I'm selling a bunch of CDs this afternoon. Funny you should ask. But I'm keeping a whole bunch as well. Yeah. You know, but there's a lot that I don't need because I've got doubles of, or okay. I've got an MP3 of, or I look at it and I go, you know, I haven't really put this in a CD machine in the last 5 years. So really, why am I keeping this? Am I keeping it because I just want to have it around and look at it, which is fine. But I also, like, I mean, you know, I don't know. I've reached the point in my life where, you know, I don't need to keep it just because it is what it is. I know what it sounds like, and I have quick access to it by other means, you know. The vinyl thing is different because I grew up, well, fascinated by it, but also it's part of a ritual that I grew up with that is very psychologically relaxing to me.
We talk about that a lot on the show, the act of, like, you know, pulling it out of the sleeve, placing it on the platter, you just going through everything. And I do think if people are doing that, that's great if it's reviving for that reason.
Yeah, I mean, I say that about CDs, how I don't need to keep it because I can listen to it somewhere else. But I do that with vinyl, though. The funny thing is I do that with vinyl. Like, I have vinyl that I haven't played in years, but I'm never going to get rid of it.
How big is your record collection, your vinyl collection?
Oh, no, it's not that big. That's another thing about my collection. And I didn't realize it until someone pointed it out to me, but I have always sold my vinyl and then bought more vinyl, my collection basically goes up and down. It becomes bigger than it is, and then I get rid of a whole bunch. It's just this, yeah. So right now, I think, safe to say, I've got maybe 1,500.
That's not big
records. No, it's not, because I know people who have, like, extensive collections. And I look at their collections and I go, I'm not even in the same game. I'm not even in the same ballpark as you guys. So if I had my way, trust me, I would have probably three times that much or four times. Yeah. I look at, like, I don't know if you know that DJ Qbert, they did a little special on his collection. And it's huge because he's a DJ. But, you know, and there's also a lot of promos and a lot of blank vinyl and all this stuff. But just the size of it is something I saw and just said, fuck, I would love that size, you know? I would love that amount of records at my disposal when I wake up in the morning.
Just kind of stare at them and smell it?
It's fun. It makes an immediate connection with the music rather than scrolling through Spotify or iTunes and just playing it, even though I do that a lot too, and probably more so than spinning vinyl these days because, you know, I'm traveling and all that.
Well, vinyl, you almost have to have time set aside for it, where everything else you can just kind of pull up as you go. Kind of something you just said there. Because music itself can kind of pull you back to a moment in time, but I think vinyl, more than like other like CDs or cassette, can also do the same thing, just kind of holding it, remembering when you first opened it and all that kind of stuff. You know, I mean, for me, it always goes back to Kiss because those are the only records I got as a kid. But, you know, all the little inserts in there. And when I still, I'll pull out my records and kind of throw them on the floor and make a mess. It still reminds me of that fun time. So,
yeah, definitely. It's a Pavlovian reaction to it. For me at this point, it's more Pavlovian than I don't really need it. I honestly don't. I mean, I remember I came home from a hall and I had, I think I bought 20 albums at a record show. This is like going back maybe 4 or 5 months ago.
Okay.
And I got home, I put the stack down, and then I looked at my library and I just said, you know what? I want to sell my whole collection. And the person I said it to just said, you just came home and you bought with 20 new albums and now you want to sell everything. So I do that now, and I didn't do that like 10 years ago, but yeah. Now I'm getting to the point where I just don't know what to do. It's just me being honest, and I still love the hunt, you know. Yeah. That's the problem.
Well, before we dedicate the whole show to that, I did want to mention another thing that you did for a couple years for your Huffington Post column, the stuff you had bought yourself for Christmas. Any updates, any kind of weird, goofy stuff you bought yourself the last couple years?
Well, you know, now it's kind of it's funny. It's quietly segued into, I haven't really made this known, but I've started collecting comics again.
Now
so,
it's known.
So I do collect, and I'm only collecting certain titles. So I've started collecting the first series of What If comic books and the Dazzler series, because I thought that was something that I overlooked as a kid. I always thought that wasn't really worth collecting because she wasn't Wolverine. but now that I'm older, I think I think the comic book series is pretty wild, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm collecting Dazzler and What Ifs.
Oh, I loved the What If series back in the day.
Yeah. Yeah. There's been a few series, but the original 47 issues,
yeah,
that's the one. And then when I'm done that, then I'm fucking done that. I'm not going to move on to the other series. I just want those 47.
Awesome.
And I'm toying with the idea of starting to collect ROM comics. Because that was another series.
It's all like late 70s, 80s era stuff that you're talking here?
Yeah, like, you know, the robot ROM. Yeah. I always overlooked that. I thought that was, again, that ROM with Dazzler, I thought those were pretty lame characters when I was a kid, but yeah, now that I'm older, I'm like, wow, this is pretty cool, actually. So I'm toying with that idea, but I don't really care if I don't either. You know what I mean?
Sure.
I don't care. So and the Dazzler thing, I'm not like driving to comic book shows outside of town to to find this.
You should.
If I'm just, you know, if I'm walking by and or if something's happening in town, then I'll check it out.
Okay. Well, your column, though, is responsible for me almost immediately tracking down a bootleg Casablanca t-shirt that I paid way too much for but was super happy to get. Never even dawned on me that I'd like something like that until I read your column, but love it.
Oh, man, you can find the Casablanca shirt, like a new one. You don't have to get, yep, a vintage one. But
no, that's
on
what
eBay,
I got, yeah. But like, it was like, I don't, yeah, know, after shipping, it was like almost $40, but whatever.
Well, yeah, that's the reason why I don't go on eBay anymore, because, I mean, at least in Canada, for some reason, the postage has, they've jacked up postage and handling. It's crazy now. Huh. I don't buy vinyl on eBay anymore. I haven't logged on in maybe 2 years.
Okay.
It's just pointless because you can buy an album for, you know, let's say $15-$20, but postage is like $30. It's ridiculous. I just refuse. So
yeah, I sent a package to a Canadian friend of mine about a year ago, and yeah, you're right, it wasn't very heavy and it was like $25-$30 or something like that. It was kind of ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. Yeah, I don't get it.
I did want to talk to you about Kiss a little bit because it sounds like, well, we share at least a similar level of passion for them. Do you collect Kiss at all? Like their memorabilia at all?
Yeah, okay. So here's the thing. Kiss played last night in Toronto. I didn't go. My fandom is not, I didn't even know they were playing, to be honest with you. Someone texted me.
You should have been opening.
And he said, he texted me and he said, are you here? I go, no, man, I'm at home. I am a fan, but I'm not, my fandom isn't blind.
Oh, yeah, same here.
So I know there's people who will buy everything, and I'm just not, maybe when I was, maybe 10 years ago or, you know, even further back, I would have bought stuff that I could, anything, but I don't need it. You know, once I got the Kistery books,
mm-hmm,
I'm done. That's okay. All I need, really. I don't need anything.
That's a
else.
Good spot to check out.
Yeah, you know, like, what else is there? After that, especially Kistery 1, nobody needs Kistery 2. but Kistery 1 was...
I wish you would have told me that before I bought it. Yeah, it's garbage, isn't it?
It is pretty garbage. But, you know, just having those two things, I don't need anything else. And I also have the... the giant Kiss comic book compendium hardcover they put out.
Yeah, okay. I know what you're talking about.
I don't need anything else. I don't need a t-shirt. I don't need, like, I don't know. And plus, I honestly feel that it's like, with Tommy and Eric, they're cool and very capable musicians, but if they're to join Kiss, they have to have their own makeup. And that's a big thing to me.
Me too.
Because when Eric joined and when Vinny joined, they had their own makeup, and that made sense to me. I accepted them easily. Easily accepted them. But you can't wear Ace's makeup. That's Ace Frehley's makeup. They set the precedent when they made Eric the Fox. They set the precedent. I'm not going by my own rules. These are the rules they set. So that's just how I feel. I'm not into it, man. I'm just not into it. And you know, the new music is cool, and they can do whatever they want. It's their band. It's not mine.
Yeah.
But I don't have to. I don't have to be like a huge booster like I was growing up, and like I am up till about, I don't know, like Lick It Up, Asylum. Like, that's where I pretty much say bye. I like Revenge, but that's about it.
Okay. I would have been happy if they would have just walked away after the first Farewell tour. That would have been a nice way to end for me.
Yeah, and I do believe that they would have enough money to last a few more lifetimes, so they wouldn't have to work.
Yeah, even if they gave some of it to Peter.
But, you know, whatever.
I don't know if you're aware or not, but they have a painter of some sort as an opening act right now. Like, he comes out and paints a big mural for 15 minutes.
I did not know that.
We talked about it on our show. The reason I bring it up, and the reason I said you should be opening, it's like, you know, Gene Simmons made that whole Rock is Dead spiel. It would be nice, instead of a painter, maybe you did something about it and give like a younger band or somebody that isn't on their level a little bit of an exposure, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point. I guess they would argue back that they have the Kiss crews for that, but...
I guess. Yeah, they do bring people on there. So,
He's another character that has turned me off of the band. I'm just not really into what he's said, the different things he's said about different topics and subjects. Whereas I believe Paul Stanley carries himself with more class, like publicly.
Bit.
Yeah, so I'm more Team Paul. But I have nothing against Eric Singer and Tommy Thayer. I think they're great musicians and everything. But those are my problems with the band or issues or what have you.
Well, let me switch gears a little bit and ask you. There's just something that I thought was a curious topic to bring up to you. Are there bands or records that you really love that you also understand why a lot of people don't agree with you? Like, they either hate them or dislike the record? An example for me would be, like, I really like the sound of Hotter Than Hell, but I get why people think it sounds bad to them.
Are you talking about Kiss?
Just in general. We're talking about Kiss, so the first thing that pops into my head is a Kiss reference. There's a lot of bands that I like that I understand why they were. Well, you know what? Tommy Thayer was in Black and Blue. I really enjoy Black and Blue a lot, but I get why they didn't turn into Bon Jovi, if that makes any sense. I get why.
Right.
Do you have that same self-awareness with things that you're very passionate about, or do you almost think everybody else is wrong?
Oh, yeah. Okay, I get you. No, I understand why, you know, I like certain things, and I give it up to the fact that, you know, my taste is just not very popular. So I'm resigned to that. I'm totally fine with...
Sure.
Yeah, lots of stuff I like that people don't really like. And sometimes I'll even say, like, oh, you won't like this. This is terrible. But I love it.
A lot of rock and metal fans can be very, you know, I don't know, boisterous about their favorites.
Sure, but I mean, I understand why people don't like Metal Church or Queensryche. But I do, you know, there's certain albums I do. In fact, before I called you, I was listening to Queensryche. I don't know.
Which record? In the new one,
by chance? I don't know, but I was actually just listening to Operation Mindcrime. Okay. and I haven't in years, so that it was weird that we were talking about this. But yeah, there's tons of albums that I just know nobody will like, but for some reason, different reasons why, I like them. Yeah, Metal Church is a great example of a band that, like, I love The Dark, and that's not a very popular album at all. No, nobody I know likes that band or likes that album. So I get it, but I love the album, and I really do genuinely like Metal Church.
Okay.
So I get it, you know, sure.
What about, like, when it comes to your own music? You know, you get, it's very fun to talk about music, but when you create your own music, you kind of put the same kind of, like, I don't know, judgment, so to speak. I don't know if that's the best way to describe it, but when you look at your own records, do you go, Danko kind of missed it on that one, or, you know, like, because the fans will really dissect everything.
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, we're our greatest critics. I mean, I think you ask most people that, they'll tell you. I what I don't like is when, you know, we're in a room or in some place that's public where there's a stereo system and whoever's there decides to start playing a mix of our songs. Oh. Then I just, I can't even concentrate because then I start fixating on the sound and if it's any good. And I don't like to hear it back publicly like that. I can do it privately, but I can't do it publicly. And sometimes, you know, the errors and the mistakes and, you know, start really sticking out for me in those situations. So it's hard for me to listen to, like, our albums in that setting. But yeah, like, there's albums in our discography that I think we missed the mark for one and I sometimes I can't go into it publicly why we did, but I know why we did, you know, and yeah. We all know why, you know. I think Never Too Loud was a weak album. The mix was terrible, but the demos were great. If everybody had, you know, heard the demos and we had stuck to the demos, then it would have been a great successor to Sleep Is the Enemy. Rock and Roll is Black and Blue. That was the result of a recording session that was rife with tension and arguments, and it just wasn't cool. It wasn't a good time. I had a terrible time. JC had a terrible time. And there's a lot of takes on that session that were rushed. It was just terrible. It wasn't organized well time-wise. We spent too much time talking about stupid shit when we should have just been, like, recording.
Sure.
And then there's other albums like Wildcat and Fire Music and our new one, A Rock Supreme, where maybe it's because I know it is because the vibe is better in the band. We all laugh and have a good time together, and we don't have to talk shit out. We just get to the business of making some rock with really talented people who are helping us, like, of course, Garth Richardson and Eric Ratz. I mean, it just makes a better album. You can just concentrate on fucking tones rather than, like, I don't like how you spoke to me about my, you know, my take playing my instrument yesterday. Like, that shit, you know, and that only happens if there's someone with a huge, giant ego that is, you know, like a, you know, as fragile as you can imagine. And so everybody has to walk around their ego. And that's happened in several situations, several times over the years in our band. For one reason or another, there's always been one person that kind of fucks up a really possibly great situation. But now everybody's got a level head and is pretty grounded to know that, hey, you know, this is really, you know, not everyone gets to do it. So let's just, you know, put all our stupid shit aside and have fun. It sounds really boring and lame to spell it out like that, but that's the truth. Like, walking into a session in the morning and everybody's kind of like trying to crack each other up is a great start. And then you just get on with the business of making music. Oh, I don't mind arguing about songs, like sections and parts, and I'll argue whether we should have this section here or not. Like, that's a great positive argument to have.
Yeah, trying to better the product.
Yeah, like, that's a discussion that's worth having, but I don't care. Like, there's been times where I can't believe, if a camera had recorded this, it would have been a great sitcom, definitely. So what the results are is speak for themselves. I think, you know, the last three albums that we put out, Fire Music, Wildcat, or Rock Supreme, I can stand by them, and I really love them. All the rest of the albums we put out, I love as well, even Never Too Loud. But I love them for different reasons. A Rock Supreme, Wildcat, Fire Music, you can throw that on the stereo, and I'll be like, yeah, that's a fucking great album. I want to hear it objectively. Yeah. And Born a Lion, I love, and We Sweat Blood, I really loved. And Sleep is the Enemy, despite the craziness of the recording, I still think we came out with a great album. That actually was pulling a rabbit out of a hat, to be honest with you, for a variety of reasons. And Below the Belt was a great album as well.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the new album. I can give you my objective opinion. At least it's somewhat objective. I did write an article called The Greatness of Danko Jones. I don't know how objective I can be. I'm a bit of a fan. But to me, it's easily my favorite record since probably Below the Belt. I think you know, almost every song is, I'm on a hot streak with new music these last few months. I'm getting these records that after I digest a few times, like, my favorite song moves around a bit. That's always encouraging, you know, like, well, when you start digging into something else. And this record has done that with me. You released Dance, Dance, Dance. But to me, the most danceable track on here was Party.
Yeah, that was definitely a dancey type song. I mean, we actually toned it down from other mixes where it was like, there was no more rock on it.
Oh, it was like, that'd be fun to
where
hear.
The fuck is the rock? So
it's got a little bit of punk in it too, though.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'd like to think a lot of our songs have a lot of a punk rock influence to them.
Sure, definitely.
But this album's different. Like, we've already released four singles in a weird way. We released We're Crazy last year. Burn in Hell we released at the top of this year, and or the end of last year. And then we released Dance, Dance, Dance. And then this week we released I'm in a Band as a lyric video. So there's four videos to go with this album before it's even released. There's a video for We're Crazy. There's a video for Burn in Hell. There's a video for Dance, 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 and there's a video for lyric video for I'm in a Band.
Would you like to explain to the listeners what I'm in a Band's about? Oh, the joke.
My anthem. I realized it after we had finished recording it. I do back all the lyrics, and it's
a fun, catchy tune, man. It's a great record opener.
Yeah, I think so too. I don't sequence the albums. JC sequences it. And that one just jumped out. It was an obvious choice even before he sequenced it. I think we all knew that this was going to be the opening track.
Okay. A couple other standout tracks for me. I really enjoy That Girl. And great way to close the record with You Can't Keep Us Down. Love them both. I mean, cool. The album's great, but those are the three that really hit me.
Oh, cool. It's interesting. A lot of people who are like really into rock are mentioning That Girl. I'm glad. I mean, it's definitely a Thin Lizzy vibe to it.
Yeah, there you go.
It's interesting. A lot of people are mentioning That Girl.
And it's also encouraging as an American citizen to see you at least hit some tour dates in the United States. Do we think, is there any chance a more wider spread Danko Jones tour is going to come through?
Yeah, well, I mean, we get all these comments, you know, online about how we never tour the States and how, oh, do you hate America? but the thing is, we've just never had an American label. in 23 years, we've never been on an American label, and it's not because we haven't tried. We tried so much that we just stopped because it was impossible. No label wanted to work with us, or no label wanted to sign us. I'm talking from like garage rock labels to like the biggest major label you could find, and everything in between. Nobody wanted to put our records out, whether they were even a rock label. And of course, you know, we are not going to sign away everything on a 360 deal either. So sometimes those were the stipulations. So we needed to find a, you know, decent label. And M Theory Audio is the first legit, real label with a staff that understands the music we're doing. You know, we put out a record, a couple of records. We Sweat Blood and Sleep Is the Enemy got an American release on a label called Razor and Tie. But their whole thing was kids CDs, like Kids Pop. I think that was the name of the series where kids are singing popular songs.
Oh, Kids Bop.
Kids Bop. They do the Kids Bop series. So
really?
Signing us and then signing a band called the Giraffes out of New York City, they were taking a stab at, you know, more heavier bands and trying something different. So we were encouraged. Plus there was someone at the label who was a big fan of our band. So we thought, okay, but that kind of, you know, fizzled out, especially when, you know, age old story, he left the label almost immediately. So that left us in a lurch. And so that was pretty much the only American label we've ever really been on. And it wasn't very fruitful. So if you don't have an American label, you really got no, you have no one in America who will fight for you. So there's no reason to go there, because America is like 50 countries in one country, and you need the manpower and the money to take it on. You know, a lot of people think all it is us. Oh, we just like call up some club and then we play a bunch of shows and people will show up. Nobody's going to show up if a label isn't behind the band, pushing the band and getting the word out. We can't do it from home. We're too busy touring in other places. We can't do five things at once, you know? So it takes a team behind any band. If whatever band you know that is beyond your, you know, regional area that you've heard of, 100% they've got a team behind them. Whether that team is like one person or 10 people, they've got a team behind them that is calling and emailing and pushing for them. And that's something we never really had, even when we were on Razor and Tie. And then, of course, all the years in between when we weren't on a label at all, there's like, we would still do some dates in America, and you know, we lose money. And if we lose money, that's the bottom line. We can't be a band anymore. It's just, it's as simple as that, you know. Now, if a band like Kiss are not touring America and they're touring everywhere else, and everybody knows they have the means to, and everybody would show up to the gigs and everything, then you can start throwing out accusations that maybe they're avoiding America. But for a band like us, we have no power, we have no sway, we're not known by anybody. And we need people like, you know, Don and Jim at That Metal Show have been, you know, our biggest boosters in the heavy community. They in America, they've turned on more people onto our band than any record label or any, you know, magazine or video channel ever could or did. They're like really responsible for, you know, getting our name out there in America. But even then, you know, we're a casual mention from them. They're not, you know, pushing us 24 hours a day. So, you know, whoever they can glean from a mention of our band, that's great. But they're just, you know, doing their own thing. So it's been hard. And so luckily for us, we've got, you know, places to play. We can tour Europe. We can tour Canada. Yeah. There's other countries as well. There are continents. So we're okay.
And where in Canada are you? Is it Toronto?
Yes.
So if you want, I can meet you at the Minnesota-Canada border, and I can drive you down to the Twin Cities here. We'll put a show on in my backyard.
Well, just to get to the border on the Canadian side from our part, if we were to get in a van, it would take us 3 days.
Okay.
It's insane.
That's right. Canada's pretty big.
And we've played Minnesota.
Yeah, with Volbeat, I know.
Yeah, but we did our own shows there. We played it a couple of times.
Okay.
Minneapolis, yeah. And so, yeah, it was, lightly attended because nobody knew who we were.
I hadn't heard of you yet.
So we spent tours and tours, like, doing that shit and no one showing up. And that can break a band if, you know, that's all they've got on their plate. But luckily we would just go, you know, okay, we got a week of this, eat it, and then we can go do that tour, and that tour will be a hell of a lot more productive than this one. But let's just get through this. So we've done the American tours. It's just nobody showed up, and then we get accused of avoiding America. So it's been a hard, kind of weird tightrope to walk.
Yeah. Well, I just I want to make it clear I was not making any accusations.
It has to be stated because now that, you know, M Theory Audio is putting out the album and behind the band, now I can say to you there's a good chance that we'll hit you know where we need to hit in America. We did the West Coast. We got to do the East Coast. We got to do, Middle America. We got to do it.
You mentioned something when you were talking about Razor and Tie that reminded me of something else you had said. At some point, I heard you mention something along the lines of, like, it's almost a bigger challenge being in a straight-up rock band than a metal band. Do I have that quote right?
Yeah, because being in a metal band or a punk band, even an indie rock band, whatever that is, there's an infrastructure behind that. There's a scene in the community that helps support it, or at least puts you in the right context.
Okay.
And when you're put in the right context, you automatically get, if not a fan base, a certain amount of curious listeners. Whereas a rock band, there is no community in hard rock music the way there is in metal and punk. There's no community, there's no infrastructure, there's no websites dedicated to it, there's no festivals dedicated to it. It's simply like, you know, the token rock band on a festival, or it's, you know, co-opted by mainstream outlets, and they just say the word rock. And it could be anything from a dance troupe to, you know, a pop singer to a heavy metal band to a kind of a soft rock band, like a 10cc type thing. That's rock music. Chicago, late Chicago era music is rock music to people. And then Motorhead is rock music to people. So there's no real definitive sound like there is for heavy metal. Even within heavy metal, you take any Def Heaven or Death Spell Omega or Emperor. That's still, That is as wide and far from a band like Metallica or Anthrax, but it's still under the umbrella of metal, so it's still within the community. So you can have disparate sounds within the community, and it still has the fan base remains, and you still have at least, if anything, curious parties who will check out your band. Whereas in rock, there's nothing like that. Even though, you know, a band like King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard sound a million miles from, at least in my to me, a million miles away from, like, let's say Greta Van Fleet, it's, to me, they're still rock. They're still two rock bands, but there's really no community that binds those two bands together. Gotcha. Like there is a community that binds Metallica to Emperor. Or, you know what I mean? Or Metallica to Mayhem, even though it's two different scenes, two different types of people who would even end up going to those shows, it's still under the umbrella of metal. Whereas in rock music, there's no such thing.
That's a really interesting point. I never hadn't really thought about it in that level. I was in a rock band that never had any success for 20 years. Maybe that's why.
Yeah, it's hard for a rock band just to call yourself a hard rock band or a rock band these days. It's better to call yourself like, oh, we play, you know, very specific type of music. Like we play like black metal.
Okay.
Okay. Well then, man, that's, you have suddenly a community behind you, you know?
Well, Danko, it has been a pleasure. Like I said, you are responsible for a lot of positive things happening for me personally in music, whether it be this podcast, discovering a lot of new music, or just reopening my eyes. So thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me. I didn't know about your article, but I'm glad you wrote it. Thanks.
Yeah, it did open a few, at least a handful of doors for me. The new album, Rock Supreme, is due out on April 26th. There are four songs you can check out now, and I just mentioned three other ones for anybody listening that I think are great, too. So if you like those four, odds are you're going to dig this record. All the best with this, and yeah, we'll keep tabs on the tour dates, and if you get within a few-hour drive of me, you can plan on seeing me in the front.
Oh, cool, yeah, and chances are better than in past years, for sure.
That's obviously music to my ears. Thank you very much, Danko. You have a wonderful rest of your day.
Cool, you too.
And we both get screwed. Take off your shoes, pants, shirt, every clothing item. I wanna make it with you. You two are both excited. Take off your shoes, pants, shirt, every clothing item. Let's get this going, baby. I know you wanna try it. After tonight, we've decided we're gonna be a night of. Don't tell anybody. Let's go, let's leave this party. Don't tell anybody. Let's go, let's leave this party. I can't believe it when I see you there. You look sophisticated. I'm feeling debonair. You gotta shake what you got. I wanna watch you shake it because it gets me hot. You're like a movie star walking in your underwear. I'm very terrified. I gotta grow a pair. Take off your shoes, pants, shirt, every clothing item. I wanna make it with you. You two are both excited. Take off your shoes, pants, shirt, every clothing item. Let's get this going, baby. I know you wanna try it. After tonight, we've decided.
Hi, can I speak with Baco, please?
Baco.
Can I speak with Baco, please?
You are.
Oh, hi. How you doing? My name's Danko Jones. We're supposed to do an interview at 12:45.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.